The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Saturday night in Tuscaloosa really was a tale of two halves, not just on the scoreboard. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday, and part of what I talked about a week ago was that the Georgia Bulldogs, at that point, I believe the number three team in America, coming off a home victory over the Tennessee Volunteers. And I started last Monday by saying, folks, almost all the commentary I have seen about the Georgia-Tennessee game is off. It's a tale of two halves. I was like, no, it wasn't. Tennessee didn't do anything in the first half or second half. Georgia snapped the ball over Bennett's head, and then Palmer made a couple of catches. That was Tennessee's first half, where they had a player ejected, drop passes, penalties. All, I was like, that was the good half? Where did this tale of two halves thing come? Saturday night in Tuscaloosa, it really was a tale of two halves. And when I say not just on the scoreboard, we have the final score, and we know what it is. Alabama looking every bit like Alabama, and honestly, sort of a classic Bama team. I'm talking about defensively, because they played a very capable, and more than that, I want to use the right word, Georgia offense. And after the first half, it was done offensively for the University of Georgia. At halftime, it was 24-20, and I want to amend what I said, a tale of two halves. It was a tale of the first 29 minutes and 37 seconds, and then the final 30 minutes and 23 seconds. When Georgia scores its touchdown, five-yard passer Jermaine Burton makes the score 24-17 at that point. There were only 23 seconds left in the half, and Nick Saban, and this is what I always say, like when you see a team that has, like they're on the, there were 11 seconds left. Well, how will they get three plays off in 11 seconds? They don't have to get three plays off in 11 seconds. They have to get two plays off in 10 seconds. And so what you had was Alabama completing a pass, middle of the field, 3 seconds left, spike the ball, boom, you got a chance. And Bama gets the field goal. Now, still losing at halftime. But when they come out of the locker room, it wasn't just the score that changed. Folks, like I said, we know how it turned out. Second half, Alabama steps on the gas, outscores them 21-0, boom, game over. And by about midway through the fourth quarter, I know I had gotten to the point where I was thinking, unless Alabama makes a huge error, Georgia can't win now. And I wasn't just looking up and going, oh, okay, well, they're up by, you know, 10 or 11 or whatever. It wasn't, again, just the math. It was, if you didn't show me the scoreboard, you got 9-10 minutes left in the game. I'm watching this thinking, it will take Mac Jones throwing late on an out route at like direct, and Stokes takes it the other way. It'll take Waddle getting careless on a punt return and it hits off his shoulder pads and Georgia gets the ball on the 8. It will take something based around Alabama, because at this point, the Georgia offense is not doing anything. So, yes, all right, Chuck, that's what you're talking about. No. That is all the scoreboard stuff from the second half. When I say this is a tale of two halves, do you know what I saw in the first half of the game? I saw one team, and it was the University of Georgia, that looked like it was the program used to being in these kinds of games. in the first half, if you look at all the impactful plays, all the decisions, coaching moments, etc., it really looked like Georgia was the program that was used to being in this game. If you look at Bama trying to go fast, for instance, get some pace going. Do you remember what happened? Trying to go fast, get the advantage, and instead of creating a big play, they got Mac. This is all in the first half. They got Mac Jones sacked. Bama jumped off sides on 4th and 1. Not Georgia. Bama had to waste a timeout when Georgia decided to get up to the line to go fast. It everything that gives you the indication of which team, which program is used to being in this type of game, every one of them in the first half, it was Georgia. Bama was making the mistake dictated by Kirby or Stetson Bennett, etc. Christian Barmore, as a matter of fact, and I hope I get this right, because I think Christian Barmore was the kid who not only jumped off sides on 4th and 1, but the really, really bad pick that Bennett threw in the second half. I think it was Barmore who got the 15-yard penalty, which, now, here's the truth. I have conflicting ideas here. If you see the quarterback running around on the field and you have a chance to hit him, hit him. Hit him hard, as a matter of fact. I'm not saying anything dirty. I don't want to hurt anybody. No, hang on, let me take that back. I don't want to injure anybody. I don't mind hurting him. In fact, I want him to hurt. That's how you play defense in 2000. In modern football, for the past probably 20 years, Warren Moon started this when he came down from Canada. Don Coryell, all that. I've talked about this. Greatest show on turf? Yeah, for about the past 20 years, your only chance of playing defense is to hit the quarterback until he stops getting up. So I absolutely endorse that. Do it legally. Because I think what happened was after that pick, Barmore also got the 15-yard penalty for the hit on Bennett. I think. All right, if I'm right about that, and the horrible offsides was Barmore, and he got the 15-yard penalty, he still was a net win for Alabama. That's how dominant that kid was on the defensive line. Batted pass. They could have lined him up at fullback. It would have saved him a few steps. That's how dominant, among others, Christian Barmore was the other day. But he's the kid who jumped off sides in the first half, not second half. And when I say I'm conflicted, when your defense makes a huge play and starts returning it, like going the other way, because it's a huge play and you're taking it the other way, it doesn't mean it's okay to give back 15 yards of whatever that return is. And that's too many teams make that mistake. That's exactly what Alabama did. But when I say this was a tale of two halves, it goes beyond, well, sure, just look at the scoreboard. Let's say Georgia had 24 points in the first half. How many did they score in the second half? Oh, they didn't score any. Now, if you're a Georgia fan listening, I can't tell you if this is good news or not. It's supposed to be good news. When Bama plays Mississippi State, when Bama played Ole Miss, when Bama plays most teams, those other teams, they don't look like the team that is used to being in these spots, being in these situations, on these stages. Bama always shows up for monster games. They look like the team who's used to this. First half of the game, Saturday night in Tuscaloosa, it was Georgia. Like I said, the quintessential mode, Georgia, we're going to pretend we're going for it on fourth down. Timeout. You bluffed Nick Saban into wasting a timeout. You don't do that to Saban. Saban does that to you. And then the second half hit. Now, the reason I say from the Georgia perspective, I can't tell you if that first half is good news or bad news, because you've had that against Bama before. Am I correct? Last three times they played Bama, they've been winning at the half, right? I know the national championship game they were. The SEC title game as well, too. If this were Ole Miss or State or Tennessee, whoever, and for the first half of the game, you were making Bama look like the newbie? You were making the Alabama Crimson Tide look like the one fresh to the national scene. I'd go, whoo, rock on Lane Kiffin. That wasn't what happened. It was Georgia. And Georgia has already been here before multiple times, and it turned out the details were different, but the outcome was the same. You had whatever block of time, whether it's been a week, whether it's been 3 weeks, whatever it is, Kirby can come up with an approach that can beat Alabama. It just doesn't last four quarters. And so that's why I'm saying after Saturday, I don't know what you do with that if you're a Georgia fan. You are a great, 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 great collection of talent right now and a really, really good team. I don't know what you're doing at quarterback, but a really, really good team. Well coached, recruit better than anybody. You know every positive about it. And you still hadn't beaten Alabama.
We cannot know true bravery until knowing fear. There are healthy fears that keep us safe, but many fears hold us back and steal our joy. What can we do? We can move from fear to stepping out in courage through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. The Bible tells a story of Jesus walking on water in the midst of a storm. The disciples were terrified, but at the sound of his voice, they were comforted. It's often the same with us. Are you afraid of what's next and unsure you're going to make it? Is your fear keeping you from taking that step of faith? Maybe that step involves a career change or repairing a broken relationship. Until we learn to overcome our negative fears, we won't live the victorious lives that God has for us. May you have faith to overcome your fears. This is Bryant Wright, speaking right from my heart.
Visit rightfromtheheart.org and click About Us to learn more about this non-denominational ministry.
Tax Solutions Now is a complimentary referral service that connects callers to companies that provide tax services.
Money matters. If you owe thousands in back taxes to the IRS, how much can Tax Solutions Now save you?
I paid less than I owe.
That's right, money matters. So call Tax Solutions Now and get the IRS off your back. Since 2014, Tax Solutions Now has been a leader in the tax resolution industry. Remove wage garnishments, property liens, fines, and penalties. Qualify for the Fresh Start program or even uncollectible status. How much can Tax Solutions Now save you?
I owed the IRS over $10,000. I paid a fraction of what I owed.
Call now to reduce or even eliminate your back taxes.
I called Tax Solutions Now and got the IRS off my back. Thanks. You saved us a ton of money.
Money matters. How much can Tax Solutions Now save you? Call now and find out.
Call 800-520-5205. 800-520-5205. 800-520-5205.
Here's farmer and landowner John Prue.
We purchased the land about 3 years ago, and there was an old farmstead on there with trees. We were going to clear the land so we could farm through it. We thought we knew where the pipe was, so we didn't call to get it located. The work on our property led to the damage of a light crude pipeline. Fortunately, no one was hurt, but it could have been much worse.
Never assume the location or depth of underground lines. Always call 811 or visit clickbeforeyoudig.com before you start work. A message from the Pipeline Operators for Ag Safety Campaign.
Bad theater seats, cheap Halloween masks, my apartment, all things with obstructed views. Add to these large trucks and buses. 18-wheelers and large buses have big blind spots and, like my apartment, they don't always have the best view. Bus and truck drivers deal with blind spots around the entire vehicle. Always take care not to ride alongside or too close behind them. Our roads, our safety. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Meet Ed, movie buff, animal lover, safe driver.
5 years of driving an ambulance teaches you a thing or two. If people knew what I know, lives could be saved. When I see a car trying to rush past the turning bus, I get concerned. You see, when big vehicles turn right, they have to swing wide to make the turn. And that's a lesson you don't want to learn the hard way. When trucks and buses turn, let's you and I wait.
It's our roads. It's our safety.
Visit www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
If you suffer from COPD symptoms like shortness of breath and fatigue, where do you turn? There are medications and oxygen, but do you know about pulmonary rehab? 3 out of 5 COPD patients have never heard of it. Pulmonary rehab is an exercise, education, and support program that gives you tools to manage your condition, and Medicare typically pays for it. So whether it's grocery shopping on your own or just walking across the room, pulmonary rehab can help you. Visit livebetter.org to find out about your options for pulmonary rehab today.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcasts. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Nifty run. It's Jordan Travis, the quarterback, with a Florida State touchdown. Florida State 31, North Carolina 28. The ESPN, ABC, ACC Network family bringing that action Saturday in Tallahassee. And it was a tale of two halves. Well, it was 31-7 at halftime, and then Florida State's hanging on for dear life. I don't know what to make of Jordan Travis, but I've been wrong about him the past two Saturdays. He was very productive. He was productive enough. He was good enough. He was all right against Notre Dame and then even against Florida State, but especially, you know, and I mentioned this after the Notre Dame game. You've got to include what he does on the ground with his full evaluation. And he goes for 100 yards and a pair of scores on the ground, and you heard one of them there. But again, as Florida State gets the dub, they improved to 2-3 on the season. North Carolina drops to 3-1. Now, I give them all the credit in the world. They beat a very good opponent. And everybody across America is dealing with their own sliding scale week to week, their own little EKG, a positive this, and we didn't get to practice, and who's out, and whatever else. It's all in the gumbo of context. For Florida State as well last week as North Carolina. So you're all coming in with your own personal situations. Florida State found a way to get a win over a good opponent. So they had beaten Jacksonville State, and I'd said that they, if not for the Gamecocks, they were going to be 0-6. They were staring at an 0-6 start. And I would say if you could get me in the door and take me back to Saturday morning, like 48 hours ago, hey, what's going to happen in Tallahassee? Oh, they're going to get beat by two touchdowns. And Jordan Travis is just kind of a different sort of quarterback. It's not an instructional video. It's not a guy that you're going to say, hey, young quarterbacks, gather around. We're about to watch Jordan Travis play. But as far as resiliency, and, I mean, putting a full 5 pounds in that five-pound sack, I mean, whatever his 100% is, you are getting it. I don't know that he's he's not an overly skilled passer, but, and really follow this, folks, he's not an overly skilled passer. I think he's a pretty decent quarterback. And think of everything that that encompasses, especially a college quarterback. Like Terry Wilson. You know what Terry Wilson isn't? Not a very good passer. You know what Terry Wilson is? Pretty good quarterback. So just kind of think of it along those lines. He's a guy you can win with, and occasionally you'll win because of. And Saturday was part of that. Sam Howell did his own thing, went for darn near 403 touchdowns himself. Had a turnover, and it was an exciting game up and down the field, and so I'm happy for the kids at Florida State. They got to taste a little success. Dan Matthews, welcome. How are you?
I am good. It's good to be back. And, you know, another really impressive win this weekend happened in Columbia, South Carolina, with what South Carolina was able to do against Bo Nix and the Auburn Tigers. And I know that some people are going to say, maybe we overvalued what he means in year two for that program and what Auburn is as a program just in general this year, with trying to break in a new offensive coordinator and Chad Morris and everything else that goes with what Gus Malzahn is doing. I still think that the credit needs to go to Will Muschamp. And you talked about it on the show before. Others have mentioned it as well. Could Will Muschamp be in some serious trouble in South Carolina? And I think that not only is he working his way out of that trouble, he's doing it with what he's doing, but also, Chuck, he's showing you that he's got players on the field. I mean, Shai Smith can play.
Yeah.
Kevin Harris, the running back, not for a penalty, has a long touchdown run to his credit on Saturday as well. He can play. J.C. Horn, the son of Joe Horn, he can play. Getting a lot of award nods this week in terms of player of the week and everything else. So good for him. But the South Carolina team showed me on Saturday that was not a fluke that they won that game. They straight up won that game. And yes, Auburn did do some things to help them out. They couldn't get things necessarily going in the passing game. Late in the game, that showed, and it was an issue for Bo Nix and the rest of that offense. But that South Carolina team could win. And this week, they're a 7-point dog against LSU in Baton Rouge. Based off what I've seen so far against LSU, I am not giving them that much of a number against a team like South Carolina, who's coming off a big win, and you could say that a letdown is ahead for them. But Will Muschamp has shown you these are the games that he can win. He did it last year against Georgia. He went into Athens, a place that people thought they had no shot to win, and he came out of there with the win. And the way that they have played so far this season defensively, at least the last couple of weeks, it looks like Will Muschamp's pushing the right buttons. And I think that that would lead you to believe that not only could he supplant himself to be still good there at South Carolina and keep his job past this season, he could also get his third win of the season this weekend.
That's absolutely possible. And last week I talked about the chances for South Carolina. Actually, I talked about the path, not just the chances, the path to South Carolina winning this ballgame. And it's funny that what I was just talking about, you know, with Florida State, North Carolina, you know, the difference between being you're not a good passer, but maybe you're a good quarterback. I talked about a similar concept with this game. I said that Auburn has an unbelievable roster. They're not a very good team right now. South Carolina, I don't think I'm overstating this at all. Shai Smith, he's a really, really good ball player. And there are some – I'm going to take the quarterbacks out of this statement, okay? So take those four kids or whoever's on scholarship because everybody always wants scholarship quarterbacks. Other than QB, there aren't 15 kids on that roster who Gus Malzahn would have given a scholarship to. There aren't 15 kids on that team. And I said Friday, I was like, and absolutely South Carolina can win because they might be a better team than Auburn. And I also knew up front they were tougher, they were going to be more physical, and they were going to have a shot. I always say, recognize the winners first, all right? We always want to bang on a favorite who loses. Give the kids wearing the garnet and black a lot of credit. Now, if you want to pick up a brick and start slinging it at Gus verbally, I understand that as well, and we'll get to that conversation. But it is a heck of a lot of credit for a team that was overmatched in almost every facet of the game, and they found a tough, physical, resilient way to get a dub.
You can do all your banking from the comfort of your home. With SunTrust Advantage Checking, you can get everything you need through our innovative mobile app. Set up balance alerts, transfer money, make deposits, pay bills, or send and receive money with Zelle. Because we believe, now more than ever, banking should be secure and convenient. Go to suntrust.com/advantage to open an account today. Terms and conditions apply. SunTrust, now Truist. Member FDIC.
Other banks charge fees on savings and checking accounts. Doesn't sound good, does it? Capital One reimagined banking. So it sounds more like this. With Capital One, you can open an account with no fees or minimums in 5 minutes. Get started now at a Capital One location or online. Sound good to you? This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
For consumers only. Approval required. Offered by Capital One NA, member FDIC. Copyright 2018 Capital One.
Attention! This is a public notice from the Social Security Disability Helpline. If you're one of the millions of Americans who are disabled and unable to work, you may be eligible for disability benefits from Social Security. Receiving benefits is your right. If you suffer from physical or mental disability, whether you're applying for the first time or you've already been denied, we can help. We'll evaluate your situation and deal with Social Security on your behalf. Best of all, there's no fee until you receive your benefits. Remember, we only get paid if you win your case. There are many reasons and conditions that may make you eligible for disability benefits. Many of them you may not be aware of. So if you're disabled and unable to work, call now to get started with your free, no-obligation consultation.
800-380-4429. 800-380-4429. 800-380-4429. That's 800-380-4429. Paid for by Quick Aid.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section. When Dad injured his back. When your basketball star tore his ACL. Opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful pain-reducing prescription medicines, but most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting in homes across the country. And tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home. Pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets. anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
Meet Ed, movie buff, animal lover, safe driver.
5 years of driving an ambulance teaches you a thing or two. If people knew what I know, lives could be saved. When I see a car trying to rush past a turning bus, I get concerned. You see, when big vehicles turn right, they have to swing wide to make the turn. And that's a lesson you don't want to learn the hard way. When trucks and buses turn, let's you and I wait.
It's our roads. It's our safety.
Visit www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
If you suffer from COPD symptoms like shortness of breath and fatigue, where do you turn? There are medications and oxygen, but do you know about pulmonary rehab? 3 out of 5 COPD patients have never heard of it. Pulmonary rehab is an exercise, education, and support program that gives you tools to manage your condition, and Medicare typically pays for it. So whether it's grocery shopping on your own or just walking across the room, pulmonary rehab can help you. Visit livebetter.org to find out about your options for pulmonary rehab today.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Kentucky 34, Tennessee 7. That was the final score from Neyland on Saturday. Tennessee quarterbacks during a 4-possession stretch in the first half. 4 possessions in a row. Tennessee quarterbacks had a lost fumble and 3 interceptions, 2 of which were returned for touchdowns. Today, Jeremy Pruitt fired the defensive line coach. You scored 7 points. You had like 287 yards of total offense and 4 turnovers. You fired the defensive line coach. Alabama gets a big win Saturday night in Tuscaloosa. I want to head up now to number one guest whenever it's time to talk Tide. Always love catching up with our buddy from 97.7 ESPN in Huntsville. He is host of the morning show there every Monday through Friday beginning at 7 a.m. It is Drew DeArmond. Drew, welcome. How are you today?
Good, Chuck. How are you doing, buddy?
Doing all right. I said that Saturday night in Tuscaloosa, it really was a tale of two halves because in the first half, Bama did not look like the team that was, you know, the heritage, the blue blood, the we're used to this stage. Everything Kirby and Georgia were trying to get done to put Bama on their heels, Kirby and UGA looked like that team. And then at halftime, the script flipped and it looked like Bama again. Tell me your impressions as that game went along.
Well, I did think that Alabama struggled defensively some in the first half, especially with their run fits. And, you know, they had some opportunities to get off the field on third down, and they were struggling a little bit, Chuck. You know, I thought really, and this is gonna sound strange, but I thought the 52-yard field goal at the end of the half was a real key to the game for Alabama. Because if they had gone into the half down 7, Georgia getting the ball coming out of the locker room, the Dogs would have had all the momentum. We know the history of kicking at Alabama under Nick Saban. It's been inconsistent. Will Reichert was hurt last year, missed much of the season. And this really kind of signaled that he is 100% back. In the scrimmages, he had been making field goals from 50-plus. He drilled that 52-yarder, which I think was a shot in the arm. And then when Alabama came out and was able to get a stop on the and get the football back and make Georgia punt the football – and was able to hit that big play to Waddle to retake the lead. I think that was really the biggest sequence in the game was the last 2 minutes of the first half and then the first 3 minutes of the second half to get the momentum back and put the pressure on Georgia's offense.
Drew, that last touchdown from Stetson Bennett before halftime, he missed on first down and on second down before linking up with Jermaine Burton for the score. At that point, though, Stetson Bennett's playmaking was done for the night. What do you think was the big difference? I think a lot of those X's and O's changes, that there are subtle ones at halftime. It was a tale of two halves, certainly for Stetson Bennett as well.
Well, it was. And I think getting Jordan Battle back for the second half to settle down the back end for Alabama, because you made a good point, Chuck, on that red zone sequence for Georgia where Stetson Bennett missed two open receivers. Then he, of course, hit Jermaine Burton on the third down to give Georgia the lead. I think, honestly, Jordan battles Alabama's best safety. His play has been pretty solid this year overall. It's been a little up and down, but he's been the most consistent. I think getting him back was a big, shot in the arm in the second half. And then I think Alabama started moving Stetson Bennett off his spot. They certainly didn't sack him very much, but I think they made him move and get outside the pocket. And when they pressured him, he made some bad decisions. He had the deflected interception that I think was huge for Alabama, because once Alabama was able to extend the lead to double digits, Georgia got off schedule offensively a little bit, and I didn't think they stayed patient with the running game. They ran the ball well at times, but once Alabama got a double-digit lead, to me, Stetson Bennett's been able to complement that Georgia running game. They've been able to play with a lead, but then you saw once Georgia got behind, it was difficult for Stetson Bennett to make the kind of throws and plays in the passing game to keep the Dogs in the ball game.
All right. I'm going to ask you about Christian Barmore a little bit. And I mentioned before you were coming on, I think he had – I know he was the kid offsides on 4th-and-1, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then after the really bad Bennett interception, I think it was Barmore who hit Bennett and got the 15-yard penalty. I said, two of the worst penalties you can have. He was still a positive, a net gain for Bama on the night, because he was so dang dominant from that interior position on the defensive line. Talk about Christian Barmore and what his game is. That kid has blown up.
He is, an interesting story, because he was a late bloomer coming out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He had some academic concerns. He was able to get in school. He just had some maturity issues at Alabama, Chuck. That's one reason why he had the red shirt as a freshman. You can see his talent. It's just so obvious. You're right. He's a very disruptive guy on that defensive line. But at the same time, it's been maddening for the coaching staff, because you just brought it up. He had a sack. He was very disruptive. He had one of those pass deflections. Alabama had several against Stetson Bennett. But he's also a guy that jumped off sides to give them a first down. When they were going to look like kick a field goal to go up 20-17, they were going to concede it. They end up getting the first down and scoring a touchdown. And you talked about that, 15-yard penalty. He does so many great things, but then he'll supplement it with the bad. And he's just got to be a more disciplined football player. Once he becomes disciplined, I think he can become dominant. That's why a lot of people have compared him to Quinnen Williams. He's still got a ways to go in the maturity department, but his talent is obvious. If he can turn it up and start buying in completely the rest of the season, Chuck, and do the little things right, he can help Alabama improve a lot defensively, because he is very difficult to block up front.
Yeah, I always ask you, hey, Drew, did you see this kid in high school? I wasn't going to ask you about Barmore. I didn't assume that you had watched a lot of Philadelphia high school football in person. But what about DJ Dale? Because he's the other, pup up front, who it was plain as day to me, Drew, what the coaching point was last week. If Bennett's in the pocket, get your hand up.
Yeah, absolutely. He's only 5'11". They watched a lot of film. They got their hands up early. Dale got the deflection that led to the interception from Justin Aboigbe. That was a big play, because the first play from scrimmage, Olaje hit Mac Jones from the backside, caused that interception. And so Georgia had some momentum there, but Alabama got it right back, which I think was significant. And DJ Dale, he'd been struggling a little bit going into the game. I know he had a head cold most of the week. He missed some practice. There was even thought that he might have COVID. But luckily, it was just a common cold. He was able to play in the game. They need more production out of him, though. And it's going to be interesting going forward. I think Alabama took some steps, step or two forward. Going into the game, the big key was Alabama was last in the country in three and outs. And they've been bad on, third down defensively. But they held Georgia to 7 out of 16. Now, that's nearly 50%. But when you think about where Alabama was coming into the game, Chuck, to get off the field as much as they did the second half, and to hold Georgia to less than 50% third down conversions, I think, was a key in the game. And they won the turnover battle 3-1. They did not force any turnovers against Ole Miss. They couldn't get stops, but they got three Georgia turnovers, and I think that was real key to finding a way to win the game impressively in the second half.
All right, help me remember this, because what was our misgivings? What was our worry about Mac Jones again? Because I can't find any worries about him right now.
That's so true. we talked to his quarterback coach, Joe Dickinson, who has worked with him since he's 11 years old earlier this summer, Chuck. And he told us, you're going to be surprised by my boy Mac. I'm telling you, he's going to be ready for this moment and this stage. And you could not stated it any better. I mean, his stats are just otherworldly right now. I don't want to sound blasphemous, but they're almost Burrow-esque.
Yeah.
In the first four games. I mean, 1,500 yards. He's already got 12 touchdowns. His completion percentage is in the mid-70s. And he's also averaging the most yards per attempt in the SEC. So he throws a beautiful deep ball. You saw what he did to Waddle. Jalen Waddle, the most explosive wide receiver in college football, in my opinion. The beautiful throw on the back end of the end zone to kind of clinch the game to Devontae Smith. I mean, he's playing at such a great level. And I thought it was significant. He threw the interception on the first play, and he got knocked around some, Chuck. I mean, this Georgia defense is still very talented. They're most talented in the SEC. And they were able to make him uncomfortable and rattle him a little bit. In the past, he hasn't been able to bounce back from that, but I think that shows how far from a maturity standpoint he's come in the last year. He was able to, steady himself, lead this offense, and three straight 400-yard games for Mac Jones.
Yep.
I understand Trevor Lawrence is probably the leading Heisman candidate in the country, but Mac Jones' name needs to be mentioned now, as now he's the SEC Offensive Player of the Week.
Wrapping up with Drew D'Armond, get him on Twitter at DrewD977ESPN. He is on ESPN 97.7 FM up yonder in Huntsville. I want to talk a little bit about just Alabama running backs in general, because I want to know if this applies to Najee as well. Damian Harris specifically said, I came back for one more year. I have a plan. Trent Richardson, I have a plan. Mark Ingram, like all these running backs, I have a plan for one more year. Even Bo Scarborough, who maybe I don't understand the kid, or maybe I just misunderstood. I didn't know him, but I remember it being a suspension, an injury. I mean, just a kid who was supremely talented and never really got good. Even he was like, all right, I got a plan for this year. Najee Harris looked like he came back and he has a plan that he's executing right now.
He is. I mean, he's playing at a very high level, Chuck. I mean, the key to the game offensively for Alabama was to stay patient with the run against Georgia. They've been the best run defense in the SEC by far. But to get him for 31 carries for 152 yards, he popped a 17-yarder early. He had a couple others, pop 10 to 12 yards. But mostly it was 3, 4, and 5 yards a pop. But he stayed consistent. There was no negative play.
Yeah.
I think his short area quickness has improved. Of course, he had a couple of receptions, too, out of the backfield. He's a very dangerous receiver. He looks like he's completely evolved as a running back in the last 2 years. I mean, he's become a lot – he doesn't dance as much. He squares his shoulders. He's not Derrick Henry, because Derrick Henry is made of iron and has unbelievable breakaway speed for someone that big. Najee doesn't have the breakaway speed, but he has everything else. He's an outstanding athlete, and the one thing he has, he's only fumbled one time in his career, and he's just a guy right now with that offensive line, and as talented as they are, with a back like Najee Harris, 235 pounds. I was telling Dan off before I came on with you, if this Alabama team can run the football and they stay with the formula to complement Mac Jones, and they rush for 150, 160 yards per game, this offense is going to be just, I think, indefensible, because I think Najee is the perfect complement to this offense and Mac Jones and these receivers.
Wrapping up again, Drew D'Armond from 97.7 ESPN in Huntsville. Two injury questions specifically. I saw Mac Jones, boy, he got shamooed at some point. He didn't look like he felt very good. And then Miller Forrestall, who was way more important than whatever the numbers say. Those two kids, plus anybody else on the injury report coming out of the game that you know of?
Well, I think right now, what we were told this right before the game, on Saturday, and last Tuesday in practice, LeBron Ray, the redshirt junior defensive end, dislocated his elbow, so he missed the game. He's probably going to miss a few weeks, Chuck. We'll see. Carl Tucker, the graduate transfer tight end from North Carolina, he suffered a hamstring injury, so he's questionable going into the Tennessee game, not dressed. So Miller Forrestall, you're right. That return was huge. It did not look good when he got bent backwards, and he's had injuries in the past, including knee problems. For him to come back in the first half and be a factor and be there for Mac Jones as a safety valve, and he's got over 100 yards receiving this year. It was immeasurable to have him back in the lineup. They had to use Kendall Randolph a little bit as a blocking tight end. And, you know, they would have had to have, he would have had to play a bigger role, I think, as would guys like Cameron Latu and Major Tennyson. But getting the senior back was big. He's a guy that's maybe a captain to this team. And then Mack, he got rattled a little bit. I remember the hit on the sideline, but I think he was pretty healthy after the game. Probably a little sore, but he looks pretty good. I think the two guys to watch, though, going forward for the game against Tennessee are LeBron Ray, who's probably going to be out, and then Carl Tucker. Tucker, they need him back for his blocking on the edge. He's done a great job helping that running game. They were able to, you know, survive it for a game, but they need him back to complement Miller Forrestall going forward. But it, we'll see how his hamstring is in practice this week.
All right, I've seen every meme, heard every joke about how if we could just replicate Saban's DNA, this coronavirus thing get whipped. Walk me through your Friday and Saturday, because I heard so many Bama fans, Drew. It was kind of funny. You know, you hear people sometimes, all they're doing is relying on, like, Mystic, you know, floating out in the ether, just that, oh, he'll be back. He has to be there. And I was like, okay, fine. Well, I'd be darned if Friday I started hearing reports, no, he's going to coach Saturday night. Tell me how that timeline went with you up in Huntsville and everybody at the station there.
Yeah, it was crazy because we were listening to Hey Coach on Thursday night as we're home at the University of Alabama football and athletics and 97.7 The Zone. And when Nick Saban said, well, you know, I would hate to miss this game, but I got to continue to, you know, what I'm doing for now. When you were reading in between the lines of his comments, I think you could tell that he had tested negative on Thursday. But you knew that they were going to need, he was going to need two more, you know, positive tests as far as they were going to have to, he was going to have to, you know, test negative. You know, it's going to have to be positive results from the standpoint for Alabama. He was going to have to continue to be asymptomatic, and he was going to have to test negative for both of them. Then on Friday, when the University of Alabama and Jeff Allen, the head athletic trainer for the University of Alabama, released it to the media that he had tested negative once again. Once he tested negative on Friday, I think everyone started thinking, unless there was a dramatic change and he was no fever and was asymptomatic, that he was going to be there. And, you know, I think Alabama was very fortunate in this situation. It ended up being a false positive. But once you got the results on Friday, everybody around that you were speaking with around that program felt like he was going to be in Bryant-Denny Stadium on Saturday night. And certainly he was able to be there and coach the football team and get a big win over Georgia. And so Alabama was very fortunate in the situation. And, again, our thoughts and prayers were to Coach Saban and his family. But he was able to, you know, be very fortunate to be there. But, again, it was a harrowing couple of days, no doubt. But Alabama fortunate to get Nick Saban back in time for the game.
Drew, always appreciate you bringing the insight, brother. It's always great stuff. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chuck.
All right, Drew DeArmond again, 97.7 ESPN in Huntsville. And here is the timeline for Nick Saban and his COVID testing. Let's go back to the first day of what we were calling fall camp practice, when normally you would have 29 practices. The SEC said 25. A lot of schools got like 20, 21, 22. With the first day of practice, when that commenced, Nick Saban started getting tested daily. So I'm going to go through his test results, every single one of them, right? Negative, 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 negative as of Monday, negative as of Tuesday. And I'm talking like the middle of August going forward. Negative, 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 negative. Wednesday, positive. What? Thursday, negative. Friday, negative. The only conclusion you can make is false positive. The man's been tested every single day since the beginning of practice. He may have been tested, honestly, daily going back to June 1. All right, we're bringing these critters back on campus now, so let's make sure that the coach is tested daily. Maybe going back to June 1, June, July, August, September, 120, maybe he'd been tested for like 135 straight days. Negative, 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 net positive. What? Huh? And then he wasn't. So it is almost like it. It's a pop, not even sport, it's pastime. It's a hobby for fans of other fan bases that aren't Nick Saban and Bama fans, that there's always something sketchy. There's always something a little hidden. There's always something. I don't believe any of that in the least. I think the man had 130, 140 negative tests. He got one positive, and so far he got a test yesterday. I guarantee you at 1 o'clock yesterday, he got another test result, negative. So right now, the total is like 134 to 1.
Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. Call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels. 800-452-4846. 800-452-4846. That's 800-452-4846.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf. Call 800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. That's 800-985-1610.
Remember in the beginning, when you first started to build a life for you and your family, you never imagined it would come to this. Instead of living your dreams, you're living with debt. In fact, it's smothering you. Now there's a way you can take back control with one simple call. If you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, you qualify to receive a free, no-obligation consultation on how to get rid of that debt for good. Call the Debt Helpline now. We work on your behalf to reduce your debt. We specialize in credit cards, retail store cards, and medical bills. One simple call is all it takes to get the ball rolling to a debt-free life. Stop living with debt and start living your dreams. Call the Debt Helpline now.
800-957-6063. 800-957-6063. 800-957-6063. That's 800-957-6063.
Hi, Grandma. Can Nina come over for dinner?
Sure. I've been meaning to ask you, what would happen if someone offered you a drink?
Grandma...
If anyone ever does, I want you to say, no, I have too much respect for my family, and I don't want to get in trouble.
I promise, Grandma.
They really do hear you. For tips on what to say, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. That's underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. This message brought to you by SAMHSA and this station.
Here's farmer and landowner John Prue.
We purchased the land about 3 years ago, and there was an old farmstead on there with trees. We were going to clear the land so we could farm through it. We thought we knew where the pipe was, so we didn't call to get it located. The work on our property led to the damage of a light crude pipeline. Fortunately, no one was hurt, but it could have been much worse.
Never assume the location or depth of underground lines. Always call 811 or visit clickbeforeyoudig.com before you start work. A message from the Pipeline Operators for Ag Safety Campaign.
Building relationships during recovery from mental and substance use disorders can put the strength of family and community behind you. We're all connected, offering encouragement, support, and hope. Join the Voices for Recovery. Strengthen families and communities.
For confidential information on mental and substance use disorders, including prevention and treatment referrals for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Meet Ed, movie buff, animal lover, safe driver.
5 years of driving an ambulance teaches you a thing or two. If people knew what I know, lives could be saved. When I see a car trying to rush past a turning bus, I get concerned. You see, when big vehicles turn right, they have to swing wide to make the turn. And that's a lesson you don't want to learn the hard way. When trucks and buses turn, let's you and I wait.
It's our roads. It's our safety.
Visit www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Barry Odom, the first-year defensive coordinator, head coach at Missouri. The last few years, there's another pick. Arkansas's got another one, and this one's going to turn into points. Jalen Catalan cut right in front of the football and takes it to the end zone.
Another example of what we were talking about earlier in the show, the difference between the roster that you have and the team that you are. That is Arkansas returning. They had another pick six the other day. They've had they in Kentucky actually have had a nice little resurgence, and it's been based around defense and creating turnovers. Pick six on the way to a 33-21 win over Ole Miss. The Ole Miss offense that we were justifiably excited about and probably still will be at one point. Matt Corral the other day, and again, credit to the Arkansas defense. Matt Corral did not have a good Saturday. But Arkansas, again, an example of that roster. It's not a good roster. And I'm supposed to not a very good roster. No, there's no qualifier. It's not a very good roster. It's not a really good roster. It's not a rather good roster. I don't need that other word there. They're not talented. They have some talented kids scattered around the roster, same as I was saying with South Carolina. South Carolina has some really talented kids, but it's scattered across the roster. The big problem in Saturday's matchup with I was talking South Carolina and Auburn is 1-85, monster advantage in overall talent, skill, depth, experience, blah, 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 blah. Gus Malzahn's looking around going, look at all these toys to play with. Well, Muschamp's like, well, we got us. And we're not as talented, but we're going to try to be a better team. Ole Miss, it's like walking the aisles at Neiman Marcus. It's bright and shiny and sparkly and awesome. And Arkansas is a better team right now. We brought this up last week, and I'm so glad that folks are kind of paying a little attention to the job that Sam Pittman is doing there. Out in Fayetteville, they get a win on Saturday again, so they even their season record at 2-2, which of course means they're 2-2 in the SEC as well. That roster is not much better than they got Felipe Franks, and of course quarterback is always the difference maker. But I also always say to evaluate, take quarterback out of it because it skews everything. That roster is not much different than it was last year, but Sam Pittman has turned them into a really tough team.
I'm going to tell you how you can get real health insurance for as little as $6 a day. Yes, now you can get affordable health insurance for you and your family immediately, starting at just $6 a day. And coverage is guaranteed regardless of your medical condition. That's right, for about $6 a day, you can have guaranteed health insurance. And there's dental, vision, and prescription coverage too. You owe it to yourself and your family to make this free call right now and learn more. There are no deductibles, no waiting period, no contracts, and coverage is guaranteed. Call National Health right now for your risk-free guaranteed health insurance quote starting at just $6 a day. Call now.
800-989-6121. 800-989-6121. 800-989-6121. That's 800-989-6121. Paid for by GoHealth.
Attention Medicare recipients and anyone turning 65. Medicare has approved new benefits not included with original Medicare and older Medicare Advantage plans. You may not be getting all of the benefits you're entitled to, including in-home aids, telephone appointments with your doctors, home-delivered meals and prescriptions. These benefits may be available and it's a free call to enroll. The new plans may also offer free eyeglasses, free hearing aids, free wellness visits, and gym memberships. Call the Medicare benefits line now. It's easy. Call 800-340-1290. 800-340-1290. Find out if you're eligible for new benefits like meal and prescription delivery, in-home aids, and telemedicine. Some plans may have a $0 monthly premium or zero copays for big out-of-pocket savings. Not all Medicare Advantage plans are alike. The new plans have more benefits for many people. Call 800-340-1290. 800-340-1290. 800-340-1290.